Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Holtcast. It's your host here, Cole Pettum. Of course, you can find me on Twitter at TalkAstonVilla, but I'm not alone because I'm sure that nobody wants to listen to just me ramble on. I have my two good buddies here. I have James Rushen and Danny Raza. We'll go to James first. James, how you doing? It's been a little while.
Yeah, all good, thank you. I don't think I've been on here since I started my new job. I think we did it shortly after Fulham. I think that aired on the first day I worked, and I passed my driving theory test on that day. So yeah, it's been a good omen for me, Cole. Yeah, it's been good.
Look at you. You're becoming a big boy. So proud of you. Danny, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, mate. Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm sat here in my parents' house today, so back down in Birmingham. So if Villa were playing, I could go and catch a game. But, you know, it's one of those weekends, isn't it? It doesn't really feel like one.
No, it's almost like this is the worst comparison I'll ever compare it to. But it's almost like you went out for like three nights in a row, and then now there's just nothing to look forward to. That probably doesn't relate to this, but anyways, whatever. I digress. Anyways, let's get on to this. Let's have me stop talking absolute rubbish because Villa did play on Tuesday. Of course, we're recording this on the Sunday, so we're a little far behind, but we'll get you caught up if you somehow lived under a rock for the last few days here. Of course, Aston Villa 2, Watford 1 at Villa Park, a massive win that lifts us out of the relegation zone for now, I must say, because you never know as a Villa fan. That puts us in 16th on 25 points. James, I'll come to you first, my friend. How did you feel about this result? Because this is something where I think a lot of people are saying this could be the turning point.
Oh, yeah, because, like, Villa had to fight for just the draw, and that would have been, I guess, in isolation, good enough, having to fight back from, you know, kind of this surprise goal coming in just before half-time when you've been dominating the match. Then, against all odds, you know, Watford holding the ball back, they're being tactical with the fouls, to say the least, not putting the ball back into play. They're making it frustrating for Villa. They get the goal back through Douglas Luiz, and then they eventually win with the last kick of the game. It bounces off Tyrone Mings into the net. So, yeah, it's a massive win. Even a draw would have been good. Let's not throw that out the window, but the win is massive. And hopefully, you know, it shows that there's a Villa team now that don't know when they're beat. Against Brighton, you know, down and out at half-time, come back and score a wonder goal through Jack Grealish. Against Watford, you come back through Douglas Luiz, and it's a wonder goal from Konsa and Tyrone Mings. So, you know, we're fighting. This Villa team, regardless of what happens at the end of the season, they're fighting, and I think that's something to enjoy.
Oh, 100%. Danny, I'll come to you next. How do you feel about this? And I think the one thing I want to get from your reaction, because I know you can be reactionary. I know you'd admit that. You'd be the first person to say that.
Oh, yeah.
Where do you think this leaves us going forward?
Okay, so first of all, let me just say, James wrote a beautiful match report for this game. I read that and I was really, really impressed. So just
bloody hell, that was so long ago. That feels so long ago now.
It was great.
It genuinely does. Yeah, it was only on bloody Wednesday that came out. So I wrote that Tuesday night and it just feels so long ago, Danny.
You're just that busy.
Yeah, no, that's it. James has been writing up about different transfer targets, you know, pulling a few out of the hat and everything. No, I'm joking. But you know, it was a good match report, James. And I think yeah, look, what that kind of exemplified for me was that this seemed like a very romantic victory for Villa fans. This is one of those victories which is going to be looked back on. And it is just Watford, and I understand that. But it is going to be one of those games where, you know, how we look back at Everton a few years ago, back in 2008, 2009, whenever it was, when we sort of, you know, won it in the last minute. In stoppage time, that was a great victory for us. I think it's going to be looked at the same way. So yeah, momentum wise, it could be great for us, could be brilliant for us, could launch us. But just, you know, just to bring us back down to earth, you know, Villa have had a problem in terms of going behind recently. You know, at the start of the season, Villa were going ahead and you know, losing it late on, whereas now Villa seem to have a problem in terms of going behind early on. So let's not forget that it was good that we clawed our way back, but this is against Watford. This still isn't Villa competing against the big teams, and there's a lot of those games left to come. But for now, yeah, it was good to see some fight on the pitch. It's something that I've been hoping to see from the Villa team as of yet in 2020, but they're starting to show it for me.
100%. I think one thing I want to pick out from what you said, Danny, and this is a stat I found last night. Villa have won a Premier League game having been behind at halftime for the first time since September 2013. And can you guess who that was against? 2013. Andy Vyman.
Oh, God.
In front of the, I believe it was the Holt End, raising his hands. No. Okay. Well, time's up. Manchester City.
Was it? Was that the game?
Yes, it was. I do believe so. That would end a run of 51 games without a victory when we're trailing. I think that's at the break. So that's a big turning point in regards to that. And then you look at Watford, and I'm pretty sure this was their first loss in 8 matches in all competitions. So you say it's just Watford, but they're on a streak here. They're on a hot streak. And you think that realistically, if we look at like 10 games ahead right now, you'd have to figure they're going to be well and clear of it. You'd think. But if we get more into the match now, James, let's get into the first goal, because we all know who it's going to be. We all predicted it. You might as well just put him in your fantasy league team when he's playing Villa, because it always seems to happen. Troy Deeney, of course, looping cross from Deulofeu comes in. Easy header. Mings, nobody could even get near him, and he's giving it to the Villa faithful. So two questions here, James. How did that make you feel, and was it just an inevitable kind of circumstance?
Well, obviously, as a Villa fan, it hurts, and you know, as a pride and passionate Villa fan, you know, it hurts to see a Birmingham City player, well, Birmingham City fan, kind of, you know, use that fandom against Villa fan, use that's their support, and you know, knowing they've got one over their rivals, you know, just seeing all of that, it makes you feel bad. But then, you know, I've had to detach myself from these games sometimes in my new role, because you know, I've got to cover a lot of Midlands clubs, and it'll be unfair to, you know, just focus on Villa. So you know, you do go through this process of detaching yourself, but even that isn't enough to kind of take you away from how much that kind of that it was like a little stab that was from Troy Deeney. You know, how calm he was in that celebration, I'd have been going wild. You know, I'd have been doing a whole Gabby in front of him. But it was kind of reserved from him. I didn't kind of see what he fully did, but he was kind of doing a face like, oh, that goal was good, wasn't it? You like that?
That was it.
You
like that one?
Yeah.
That's spicy.
And that isn't like the worst thing he could have done, I don't think. I think there is this kind of layer of mutual respect. Like, Troy Deeney's come from, you know, in football terms, relatively nothing. Like, he shouldn't be, like, there's a future where, you know, there's a parallel world where he never even got the chance to play Villa. You know, he's just playing for Walsall all the time, and he's playing in League 2 and League 1, and, you know, jumping it up and down between the championships. So there is a respect from Villa fans, I think, for the hard worker that Troy Deeney is, but that goes out the window when he scores against you. At the end, you know, Deeney, what's the score? I think it's a you know, one-person club, Watford, when it comes to Villa fans' perception of that club. Watford are the Troy Deeney club, and if he scores, because he always does against Villa, he's going to rub it in, so it makes you feel, I guess, more nervous than against other teams, because, you know, it's Troy Deeney.
Do you know what? I like Troy Deeney. I'm gonna say it. I'm not. I like him because of him as a player. I think he's a fantastic striker, and I think he exemplifies the rivalry in football today. And I think it is there's a real sort of lack of that sometimes. There's a lack of spice. There's a lack of sort of players getting up for a game. And when you see a player want to score against the club so bad, even if it's our own, I think that's nice to see. It's nice to see that passion. It shows that it's not all about the money, you know. And you know, on a Villa level, he goes and scores against us, and then we go and beat his team in the last minute. And it makes it so much sweeter, doesn't it? It makes it so much sweeter. You've got to remember to, you know, take the yin and the yang with football. It's just that if Troy Deeney played the way that he did against Villa every single game, he'd probably be in the England squad, because there was a lot of talent there. He just steps it up against us.
Well, there were shouts for him to be in the England squad from a few people, surprisingly. I think it's just that grit and determination that brings him, like, it out of him more than anything. But James, I'll come back to you. We'll go back to that goal. At that point in time, where do you feel personally it left us?
In a bad state. I think at that point, you're looking at a Villa team that are relegated. Like, I know the position isn't finalised until the end of the season, obviously, but you're looking at a team that has tried so hard to score, hasn't scored, and the other team have one chance and it goes in. Like, one chance where it's wide open, and they get the look and the skill to, you know, use that look and bury that goal. So it is, it looked bad for us. I mean, we went into that half time, and I've had a message from my friend Pat, and he said, you know, that was like the lowest point for me as a Villa fan after everything. That was just like realising the fight had gone. But then you can't count Villa out. It's halfway through a game that Villa come right back into it. But after that goal, Cole, it did feel bad. Like, it felt like how this team has been fighting all game for a goal. The other team hasn't had to do anything, and they've got one. And they're a relegation rival right now. So, you know, going into halftime after that goal, you feel awful. I mean, there weren't I don't think there was many boos. I can't remember because it all kind of got lost in what happened. But I don't think there was many fans actually audibly frustrated. I think there was more so exasperation, thinking, how can your team try so hard and not get anything? And the other team, just one chance, man, and it's in.
Yeah, but you know what? Watford are hard, hard workers. That's why they've done so well recently. It's all about the hard work with them. It's all about the running. It's all about the press. And they know how to do it well without losing their shape. And, you know, at the end of the day, they were doing well. Like, they were doing well against us because it was actually before they started. But it was basically before they shut the shop window, wasn't it? It was before they shut the shop window. They were doing everything right. They were doing exactly what they were supposed to and exactly what they've been doing in the last few games. Press the heck out of a team, stay tight, and just maintain your shape. But yeah, as you say, James, you know, Villa were working hard in that game.
Well, it's kind of funny you guys say that, because I think this game, more than anything, exemplifies a game of inches, like an absolute minimal chances, because you look at all the goals, they kind of came from absolute nothing, really. If we're going to grade the first half, guys, I will start with Danny. What would you give it? Because honestly, I didn't feel like we played that badly.
No, it wasn't bad. I mean, we were getting into positions and stuff. You know, there were points in time where Grealish was delivering balls in, and there were enough men in the box, and it was a better performance than I had seen recently. I did feel that we lacked the striker. El Ghazi again just was struggling to stretch that Watford defence. I think Watford played with, did they play with five at the back? I can't remember. It felt like that at times. But yeah, I think. First half for me was probably just a bit of a 6 or a 7.
James?
I'm going to go for an alphabetical grade because I think it defines kind of more of what I was thinking. And it's along the lines of Danny, you know, we didn't play that bad, but it wasn't good enough. So a C, just a flat out C.
And why would you say that?
Because I don't think you can hammer Villa for, you know, I guess they conceded the goal in poor circumstances. Tyrone Mings had a bit of a go at Ezri Konsa about that. You know, Troy Deeney surged into the box and marked. But this is a team that had been working hard for the goal and it just didn't happen for them. So I can't really take too much away from it. Would have been disappointed. Like I said, it's a team that looked relegated. Their heads were down. But that's because they'd worked so hard and had it all undone by, you know, one crazy moment. So, yeah, I'd go for a C because I think it's pretty fair for that first half.
What's funny as well, the possession stats were higher for Villa in the first half as well. You know, there wasn't actually much difference between the first and the second half. Watford just, I think, it really, really suited us that they scored early on because it, even in the first half, James, I don't know about you, but or you, Cole, but it seemed like they had absolutely zero interest in scoring after that, and that really played well into Villa's hands. It let Villa kind of calm down a bit where they usually struggle in these situations.
Yeah, well, I think they're coming off a really tough, hard-fought battle against Spurs. I think that was 0-0, if I'm correct. And then you're looking at this, they're probably thinking, okay, we have a goal here. Let's see what we can get out of this and hopefully get all 3 points. And it's weird when it comes to Villa, because we'll get in the second half now, because I don't know, it seems like that 45 to 60th minute mark, it's almost like we have to completely start all over again. It's like we're starting from minute zero all over again, and it seems as soon as the 60th minute hits, and it's been like that for the last 3 games in my opinion at least, it's like we turn it on. It's absolute desperation point, and we just have to see what we can get. And of course that comes through Douglas Luiz in the 68th minute, I believe, if I'm saying that correctly. Of course, a little bit of a missed opportunity by El Ghazi, but I'll play it down for you. Of course, Matty Target hits it in from the left. Ben Foster makes a good save to parry it to the, I guess, his left, to the right. El Ghazi with what you would say a bit of a blooper completely misses it. And then, of course, you had Douglas Luiz that buries it into the top of the net. And I think I'm thinking here, James, holy crap, he almost missed that, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, when it fell to two chances, Target's first shot was decent. The parry from the keeper already reacting to where it's going to go, and he gets duped by it a bit. But Douglas Luiz, you have to hit it. But there's always that moment of nerve, you know, when that clear chance is presented. Because goals, when they happen, I guess sometimes you're not expecting it. But in that moment, it's like that is the most clear-cut chance for a goal. It's an open goal. it's fallen to a player, but there's been misses. So I guess the nerves are there. But look, it hits the back of the net. I think the main consideration is you just think, how can VAR take this one away? And it doesn't. I think, you know, we've been poisoned a bit by VAR, but that was my concern.
Could have been, though, innit? Because El Ghazi actually completely cocks it up. And yeah, exactly. if he doesn't cock that up, that's offside, most likely. At least from the angle that I've seen. And I think, you know, whilst we're on the top, I mean, by the way, Douglas Luiz, brilliant coming off the bench, right? Two games in a row, just looking a different player when he's coming off the bench. He might be the Brazilian Conor Hourihan. But by this point as well, like, let's not forget, I don't want to completely take this off topic, but Villa should probably be down to 10 men by now as well. So there's a little bit of luck involved here in the sense that, you know, we haven't been screwed by VAR. But you know, we've had the luck and we've taken some of that today, and not today against Watford. I mean,
that's a good segue because that was the next thing I was going to bring up, guys. How lucky is Mings to be on the pitch at this point? Because it's pretty close, like it's marginal. And of course, if you missed it, a ball, of course, was flicked in the air. Mings hit it with his hand. It's pretty simple as that. I don't know how really people want me to describe that. Clear handball. It was missed. He's, of course, on a yellow already, I do believe. So, James, do you think he should have walked?
It's tough because, look, you get that yellow card, and that was a obvious yellow card. You get the yellow card. That's a caution, right? That's called a caution. And that's like, you do something again, you're off. And Mings did do something again. Like, he patted the ball down to stop a counter-attack, and I think that's just a 50-50 decision there by the ref, whether to give him the foul or give him another yellow card. And to be fair to him, I think he got it wrong. I think Mings probably should have walked for that.
Yeah, it didn't look intentional, though.
I know, but whatever you do, man, it's hand. But you've used your hand to stop a counter-attack.
And is that yellow, though?
I'd say so. I think if you were considering a player who weren't booked, you'd give him a yellow.
Yeah, but I mean, he's not pulled his hand out to get that, has he? I mean, the ball's bouncing, and you know, who is it that's trying to get past him there? It's De La Feu, obviously. Yeah. Like he's kicked it right, you know, upwards to sort of middle core area for Tyrone Mings.
Yeah,
I think it's coming at a quick pace.
That's the only thing I think that stands for him then is the context of it. Rather than following the letter of the law, the context of it probably saved him.
Yeah, and it is just on the halfway line as well. If this is maybe a halfway into Villa's half, that's probably a yellow and a sending off.
And I think probably the home fans had some effect because the referee in general, I think he did us a few favours. Let's absolutely get made that clear. Like the match stayed on a little bit longer because of the time wasted. Then probably the 4 minutes that was wrongly allowed in the first place. It should have been more like 7 or 8. But the referee did us some favours. But by and large, he did have a bad game because Jack Grealish was getting hammered. And maybe the home fans kind of giving him so much stick maybe played a small part into that. Because it always does. Like, the fans do affect it. So I don't really know, you know, why he chose not to show the second yellow. Maybe it's the context. Maybe it's the pressure. Who knows?
So we see that happen. Villa, you know, we could say get off with one then. Douglas Luiz comes on as a substitute. This is something which I found quite interesting. Actually, last couple of weeks, you know, Dean Smith's had a lot of stick, hasn't he, for making bad substitution choices and, you know, not making changes that affect the game positively for Villa. But you know what? Douglas Luiz was a fantastic addition there. Just really gave some energy. Probably going to start with a drink of water next game. But, Cole, I'm actually interested in your opinion here, you know, being North American. Vasilev comes on as well in the 76th minute. Do you have any sort of idea that he's going to come on and score the winner or how do you rate his performance, Cole?
It's really tough when you look at these kind of things. Super young, hungry. That's great to see. And, of course, once again, it changes the outlook of the game for the second game in a row. And it's one thing I'll pass back to you guys in a second here, whether he should have started or not. But, no, I thought he was fairly impressive. It's one of those things. You can even look at it with Connolly from Brighton as well. I think I've said this on a previous pod, where they're so young and they get that goal. And then it's like they're literally the next wonder kid. You know what I mean? It would have been nice for him to grab that winner. Was I hoping? Yes. Was I expecting it? No. it's really tough because at one point you want him to do well, but at the same time you don't want to put so much pressure on these youngsters because I'm acting like he's like 10 years old. He's not 10 years old. We know that. It's a really kind of fine line in that sense, but no, I didn't really see him offering that. When I look at him in particular, I feel like he's going to be one that's going to press that back line, make them have less time on the ball, essentially force them into errors. And I think he does that excellently. I think that's really probably what Dean Smith is telling them. And you'd hope so, at least. But James, I'll come back to you because I want to get onto Vasilev here quickly. Should he have started? We've said this for a few weeks in a row now. It's kind of getting old, especially now we have Samata, which we'll get onto later. But should he have started? And with that being said, to kind of counteract that, how did you feel Ghazi played up front?
I think Algarzi does the best job he possibly can up front, which is, you know, the basics of just being able to hold the ball up, flick it on, pressure the back line are there. But there, I know Vasilev's a wing, like he's a more natural winger, but when he plays centrally, he does have a forwards instincts and he will pressure the back line. I think Algarzi tries to go more often and not wait for the chances and wait for, you know, the teammates to come in so they can have some room in passing triangles to, you know, play around with. Algarzi played okay. I think he's, you know, he's done the best with what he can in an unfamiliar role. I do think that probably Vasilev should have started, but then I do understand Dean Smith's probable reasoning for the pressure of that game is a lot, right? And I think having an experienced head, having teammates that know each other is better in that circumstance than chucking on a guy who hasn't had a whole lot of time with this team. You know, if you're what you've got players who, if you do, on the rare occasion they do make a chance, you've got players there in Trezeguet, Jack Grealish and Anamar Ghazi who've been scoring goals for us this season. To kind of disrupt that, bring in someone who's more natural at striker like Vasilev, who is very inexperienced, you're putting a lot of pressure on his shoulders, and I'm sure he can handle it, but there's more at stake here than his development. There is, you know, if we had a few more games without Wesley and was really struggling to get a striker in, absolutely. But look, we got Samata in. Vasilev will be back, you know, as a substitute role. And there won't be a lot of pressure on him. And now probably is a time where he can develop a bit more.
What's Samata, guys, right? Am I right in saying that? What's Samata? I said that last week. Yeah. Danny said I was cringy last week for saying that. But Danny, we'll get to you. Sorry for cutting you off.
No, that's all right. I didn't want to give your joke very much space, man.
Thanks. How do you feel? Same question. How do you feel Algarzi played? Should Vasilev start? Where do you stand?
Well, I mean, ideally, we would have liked to have seen Samata get done in time, but I realised that can't happen always. I said last week that Vasilev should start. I still feel like he should have started. I mean, in hindsight, we've won the game, and my opinion doesn't matter. But yeah, I still think when you've got a natural striker like that, I know he's young. I get that. You've got to give them game time because this is when the opportunities are made for them. If not now, if not when we haven't got a striker, when does he start? When does he play? Do you keep calling him young forever until he's 19, 20? You know, Keenan Davis is what, 22, 23 now? Something like that. I might be totally wrong. But you know, it happens though. You know, when the opportunity is there for them and you haven't got anybody in that role, and I'm sorry, I don't think Algarzi's been playing in that role too well. Then I think you got to give them time. But I think even with Vasilev, like, you know, I get what you guys are saying. He's very young. You don't want to throw all that pressure on him. Saw, you know, some talk about him today, like, you know, Bulgaria wanting him to declare for them and whether he should do that for Bulgaria or the USA. It's early days. He's barely got any time on his on the pitch so far. So, yeah, I mean, we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, guys, let's get to the big time play here. The big matter of the game, because I've never fist pumped so hard in my life at work, and I work with an Australian lady. I know she's not listening to this, so she won't be offended. And she probably thought I was the weirdest person in the world because I kind of screamed like a little girl. yes, I was watching this at work. I have that privilege sometimes. But anyways, the 95th minute, because we like to leave it late because we're Villa fans and it doesn't like to be done as easy as we hope. Tyrone Mings gets a goal because Ezri Konsa's shot deflects off, what was it, his heel? If we're going to play this back, Pepe Reina hoofs it up. It's a last-ditch effort. Drops down. Mings frantically comes across the box, gets taken down. Konsa with the shot goes off Mings, loops over, pass Foster. It is 2-1, game, set, match. James, how are you feeling about this? And are you a little bit gutted for Konsa?
Yeah, but I think it's a team game, and you know, it would have been nice for Ezri Konsa to get his goal. But look, this is what happens. If he takes a deflection, he gets awarded to a player. Sometimes there's no going back. So Tyrone Mings' goal as it stands. But it's a team game. And Aston Villa needed that win more than anything. So I'm pretty sure that's a nice consolation for old Ezri. But yeah, man, hell of a goal. I think the second he hit it, it's just that angle. You're like, you know it's going in. Like, you absolutely know it's going nowhere but in the net. The deflection helps it on, I guess. We will never know what would have happened to that goal if it wasn't deflected, but it didn't seem a major deflection. So, yeah, man, it was insane. The whole end really shot off. It wasn't like the limbs like the Everton game. The Everton game was so loud earlier in the season. But, man, it was just such a relief.
Danny, what's your little pun here? Because I'm going to call you out for it, because I just saw it come up on my screen. Please,
no, don't call me out. James said consolation. I thought he was making a joke. I thought he said consolation. It's good. It's a good headline. Yeah. You can tell he's into print journalism now. actually, that's the title of this Hulkcast, isn't it?
We can do that if you want. I haven't come up with one, but we can do that, sure.
There you go, man.
Okay,
listen. Limbs. Let me just address that first of all. I don't think we're ever going to get limbs like that again. That's thanks to our new friend VAR. Because I don't, James, you were at the game, I think, right? So, like, is that a factor? You know, 95th minute winner, do you just kind of hold off?
Not in that one, mate. It was there was just celebration. There wasn't any holding off in that one. That was just crazy. No, look, it's the type of goal where you really can't see VAR pulling it back.
Yeah, it's just, you just know.
Yeah, I mean, like, if it's a tapping from close range, like the Douglas Luiz one, there is a bit of a, you know, anxiety, but you could see how many players in front of him. But whereas, you know, Ezri Konsa's goal, you don't even see hit in real life. You don't see it hit Tyrone Mings. You just see it hit the back of the net from yards out. So, man, no worries there about VAR at all. It was the last thing on my mind. So, yeah, enjoyable for once.
It was just fun, though, wasn't it? Like, the three centre-backs link up for that, which is great, right? And you've got Pepe Reina, you know, with a beautiful ball. I think what's actually happened there is that AC Milan had actually held on to Andrea Pirlo. He's lost his hair. He's playing in goal. I think that's what's actually happened here. But, yeah, it was a great ball. Great ball. And I think it just goes to show, like, Hawes, Mings and Konsa, the three of them recently have been, you know, really gelling together. I know there's been games where it hasn't quite worked, but you know there's something there. You know there's a system there. Hawes has a brilliant game, doesn't score, fair enough. Konsa gets the assist on Tyrone Mings. Even after the game, Konsa said, you know, look, if that doesn't come off you, Tyrone, I don't even know if that goes in. If you look at a lot of the post-game interviews where Konsa's kind of like half on the floor and half, you know, not quite there at all. That's what you'll hear. But yeah, great winner. Great to see one last minute as well. It almost feels like Villa are never the team to do it. Never the team to get that last minute winner. And it's just such a sweet feeling. Such a sweet feeling indeed.
Oh, 100%. We'll move away from the victory at Villa Park, of course. Let's do some transfer news. Me and Danny talked about this last pod, and of course now it's official. We don't have to talk about possibilities. And we said it earlier, and that is Mbwana Samata Samagol from Genk. And that's believed to be around a £10 million fee for the 27-year-old Tanzanian international. So basically, he has the whole weight of a country and club on his back now. So I'm sure the Villa Twitter account is going to be boosted with lots of Tanzanian Twitter followers. Good for them. James, how do you feel about this transfer, and what essentially do you think he can offer Villa going forward for the rest of the season?
I think it's a different play style now for Aston Villa. Firstly, like, I've been putting a lot of crosses into the box that have been wasted. I think Matt's good in the air. He wins balls in the air. I think you see the classic goal, the one he scored against Liverpool for Genk, the air time he gets, the space he runs into, the way he makes use of, you know, a cross coming into the box is something we have not seen all season. We haven't had any aerial threat whatsoever. I mean, our only headed goal from Jack Grealish was pulled back on New Year's Day against Burnley. So yeah, there is a dynamic there that he offers, but he's also a player who will run in behind the defences more. Like, kind of what Scott Hogan was doing at Brentford under Dean Smith, kind of spearheading that line, making sure that he's the sharp focal point of that line, rather than being like Wesley or Al-Ghazi and dropping deeper, or like Jack Grealish and dropping deeper and bringing players into play with the technical ability. He's a guy who will latch onto balls, race through, and bury him first time, no questions. Also good in the air, like I've said. So yeah, there's a few new dynamics for Villa. They're going to have to maybe approach playing games in a different way. Who knows? We'll see. I'm really excited for him. He's an iconic player before he's even kicked a ball. And regardless of how his Villa career turns out, he's going to be an iconic player for Aston Villa because he's the first Tanzanian to play in the Premier League.
I honestly, you're such in journalism mode right now. I love it. It's just great. I have to take there's a little pause there, and it's just because I have to take it in. I don't know. I just love it, James. But anyways, Danny, let's get on to Samatta here. Is it a would you classify this as a cheap and cheerful signing? It's not very much money in terms of how expensive transfers are now. So kind of what's the risk reward ratio right now, would you say?
Oh, listen, look, I'd say there's little to no. Well, I wouldn't say there's no risk whatsoever, but I'd say risk reward ratio. Yeah, you're very much erring on the sides of reward here. I don't understand why anybody was, you know, sort of having a go at Villa for not signing a player with Premier League experience. If you want Premier League experience, what you end up with is this is no offense to anybody, but what you end up with is a Glenn Murray who's a little bit older, and you have to pay a little bit, you know, more than his transfer fee for. What you've got with Mbwana Samata here is you've got a player who's in the form of his career. You've got a player who's, you know, very experienced, you know, both in Europe and internationally. And you've also got a player who's been, you know, prolific. He's been prolific in a tough league in Belgium, where, as we've said before, a lot of great players have come out from. And I'm really excited to see the Tanzanian Lions group join us on Twitter soon. Sooner rather than later. I was joking about that in the last podcast. Won't be long before we see that. And I welcome them on board. It's great to see sort of the brand of Aston Villa expanding like that too. But yeah, I think it's been a while since we've had a striker who can spring caper and hop like that. And I think if we can get some balls actually getting, if we can get somebody actually on the end of these balls and these crosses that Matty Target and Freddie Gilbert have been putting into the box, then absolutely brilliant. I think he fits right into our system.
Oh, 100%. Let's go with a couple Twitter questions here. They're roughly around the same thing. Kato9 essentially asks, if we're going to go for a second striker, James, who do you believe it's going to be?
I have no clue. You know, I think Christian Benteke is going to be... I feel like that can't possibly happen because of the wages you'd have to pay him. He's like completely overvalued. And if you want to transfer, that is completely against anything Aston Villa want to do. That's the one. And I don't see the emotional pull, because the only player in this team he's played with is like Jack Grealish. So, I mean, like, Grealish runs Villa. So if he has any say into it, then surely. But man, I don't know. Like, I don't have any. It will come down to deadline. I'm absolutely positive it will probably come down to deadline day, because that's when players will be, the prices will be cut. Teams will panic. Look, AC Milan, like this Piatek thing. AC Milan have tried to hold an auction with this player. They wanted everyone to come in for this player. No one's come in for him. He's not going to go for 30. He's probably not going to go for 30 million. This is a player who will go on deadline day for less money than AC Milan wanted him for. So, you know, this striker thing is just, it's going to drag on. There's going to be no clear answers. A link will come out of nowhere, as they always do, and it will be the one. But there's a lot of speculation now. Villa being linked to every striker. Samatta takes a lot of pressure off this transfer team, and hopefully they can do some good business on a deadline day. Because, look, we don't need another permanent signing. We just need someone as support till the end of the season.
100%. And, Danny, we'll switch up the question here. another one comes in. If we're looking at any wingers in this window, do you think that's really a priority right now? And if so, who ideally would you want?
Oh, God. Well, wingers in terms of who's available, I'm not quite sure. I think, you know, when you look at it, it's such a key position that you don't tend to have players like in that position available, do you? I don't know who we'd go for in terms of who we can afford, if I'm being totally honest with you. But I know we've been linked to guys like Benrahma in the past. I think we've been linked to somebody in France at the moment who kind of plays as an attacking midfielder. What's his name?
I can't remember. I think so.
Let me have a look.
Well, while Danny's doing his research, we'll move on and we'll come back to him.
But no, I think look, the winger position is something it's Guirassy, sorry, it is. Okay. I'd quite like somebody like that coming in. But in terms of wingers, we've got so many. We've got Hotter, we've got Grealish, we've got Trezeguet, we've got El Ghazi. I don't think it's a priority for Villa. If we can get one in, brilliant. I don't think we've been brilliant from that position. Are we really playing with wingers right now? Not I think comparatively. And I think if we're going to stick with the 5-3-2 system that we've got going at the moment, then yeah, I think it's not really the priority. I'd rather we get another striker in.
Okay. We'll do kind of like a one word answer kind of thing. We'll start with James. If you could sign one player this window, realistically, who would you want?
Realistically? Oh, that's so tough because I really like this Villa team, but I think Saeed Benrahma could be a game changer. But look, he's going to be way out of Villa's price range. It's going to be something that happens next season, I'm sure, if Villa stay up. But no, he hasn't had a great season personally as well. I think his father passed away earlier this week, so he's going to be due some time off for that personally. So yeah, it's not going to be a brilliant season for him on the pitch, off the pitch. And again, he's way out of Villa's price tag. So I think it's realistically one that will happen at the end of the season. So I don't know. I'm going to just bounce out of the way of that question and say, sorry, Benrahma.
Fair enough. I have to put you guys on the spot here because I feel like that makes the best content. Danny, same thing with you. Who and why?
Slimani, man. Islam Slimani. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think he's exactly the kind of striker we need. I think he's exactly the kind of striker you need in a relegation battle as well. You know, somebody who's going to give the defense trouble. I think somebody like him up there with Samatta as another option, I think would be fantastic for us. I think we've got a very talented team, if I'm being totally honest with you. I don't know where else we need to strengthen. Yes, I think I agree with James on Benrahma. Somebody like that would be brilliant for Villa. Can we afford a winger that's going to improve the side right now? I'd have to say no. I really don't think so. Unless we were to get like a Pedro in, which, you know, was a which was a link recently. But I think at the moment I'd probably say Slimani.
That's fair. I'm going to be realistic here. Well, I don't know actually how realistic this is. Just bring the man home. He's a legend. And I would just love to see Benteke come back. I know it's probably not going to happen. Maybe it's a little bit unrealistic. Maybe I'm romantic right now. But it would just be nice to see what kind of mentality he comes back with. And maybe if in some strange universe that almost revitalizes his career.
You see what Hodgson said about that one, though?
No.
He did say, I can't believe you're asking me that question when asked about a potential Benteke transfer. He said he's one of our best players. He's made 4 starts this season.
Yeah, so what I've got to say about managers since I've started, you know, my new role is like, they don't, like, everyone believes every word that comes out of their mouths. And I think, like, no one ever is 100% honest, like, at any time. So why do we put these people on pedestals and believe every word that comes out of their mouth? Because Hodgson's just trying to raise the value of his player, and or he's being pissy because a player is linked away with a move. And like, do you just have to trust them at every moment, everything they say, even though they are all contradicting each other? And like, that's my thing as a fan, because like, when someone has a press conference, like Dean Smith has a press conference, and he was asked about Pepe Reina, right? And he goes, I'm not sure about that deal. So people go, oh, he doesn't know it's happening. They're doing it behind his back. And I'm like, how'd you take that from that? Like, he's pushing it away. He's just deflecting the question. It's clear.
It's ridiculous to think that Suso isn't chatting with Dean Smith. Just like Dean Smith walks into training one day and there's Lionel Messi. Oh, hi, mate. How are you doing?
Like, it's just like these players aren't being like hoodwinked. Like, Dean Smith isn't being hoodwinked. Like, he's one of the most important people at the club, but the structure of the club is more important than him. So they're going back to this Hodgson thing. Like, people just believe every word that comes out of these players, mate, about these managers' mouth.
Mavs. Oh, 100%. We'll start wrapping things up here shortly because we know James is a little short for time. So we'll just get on to a quick preview here of the Leicester game, because of course that is taking place on Tuesday night at Villa Park. Second leg of the semi-final in the Carabao Cup. Of course, as things stand, it's 1-1. Of course, that result was away, and that's a decent result, of course, against a Leicester side that arguably right now are a little bit topsy-turvy. And to date right now. They might be without their main man up front. Jamie Vardy has a bit of a glute issue. So it's probable he might start. It's probable he might not. James, with that being said, how do you feel about going into this game? And if you'd be ever so bold, give me your score prediction.
I feel confident because, look, it's Villa managed to hold Leicester to a 1-1 draw in one of the more positive performances of the season. I mean, not positive in terms of attacking, but largely the result was positive and the performance itself was something we could take positives from. They held Leicester back. They frustrated Leicester. They did well with the back three. Ollie Nolan had a good game. I'm pretty sure he'll be in contention for the Leicester game at Villa Park. But look, it's 1-1 at Villa Park. It's going to be a big crowd under the lights. This is what magic is made of, like we saw against Watford. So big crowd backing them. Lots of expectation on the Villa. They usually come through in these circumstances. Let's not forget, you know, this is Villa's time to shine, and they come through when that happens. So I'm going to go for a 2-1 to the Villa.
Ooh, love that. Danny, same thing, but as well, I want to know, do you think Jamie Vardy's going to start? Because I think that's my biggest fear point right now.
Gosh, I couldn't tell you whether or not he was fit, but even if he wasn't, I don't think this is an issue, because Iheanacho scored 7 goals against Villa in 5 games. He's ridiculous against Villa. You talk about Troy Deeney, but you know Iheanacho is his record against Villa is ridiculous. So Vardy or not, Leicester are going to have some attacking threats. So the defense for Villa is going to be really is going to be key because you know 1-1 is like basically starting from zero again, isn't it? I think Villa needs to get in there early, needs to get some goals early. I think Leicester don't look as threatening as they have done recently. For whatever reason, they just don't seem to be as strong at the moment. They did get that 4-1 win against West Ham, but West Ham have been poor. You know, make no mistake about that. I thought Brentford played well against Leicester on the weekend, but what you will see is Maddison probably back in that team, Tielemans probably back in that team, Pereira probably back in that team. But they really struggled to counterattack against Villa for whatever reason. I think it was that back three for Villa that, as James said, that back three was brilliant at stopping Leicester from doing what they wanted to. Gilbert and Target, hopefully, if they're starting for Villa, will be key. Stop Harvey Barnes and Perez from playing. You'd like to think, and I also think, you know, our play out wide is going to be key because of Leicester's fullbacks too. Pereira and Chilwell are always going to be attacking. If Villa can get past Pereira and Chilwell, if Villa can take advantage of their own width in this game, there's no reason why we can't get a result here. Add to that the idea of Samata coming in and potentially scoring his first goal for us. I think that would be wicked.
What would your score prediction be, sir?
Right, I usually err on the side of caution, but I want us to do well in this semi-final. I want us to get into the League Cup final, so I'm going to say 2-1 Villa as well.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it's fair to say, guys, no matter what happens, one of these teams is probably going to be facing Manchester City. They're up 3-1 in their tie against United. So unless United become the United of old somehow, it looks like there's a tough uphill battle. But nonetheless, I think this is a huge moment for Villa season, and it'd be nice to get a cup. Before we wrap things up, because I'm a silly goof and forgot to ask you before, James, can I get your match ball for the Watford game?
Pepe Reina saved Villa late on. Excellent passing ability. It's a different dimension, that goalkeeper, but still has the quality of Tom Heaton. Very comfortable on his feet, barely wants to pick the ball up. He propelled Villa to victory with that last free kick as well, stepping high up. But yeah, he really wants Villa to win. He's not going to sit back and let anything else happen just because he's a goalkeeper. He's going to get up there and give it some. So yeah, Pepe Reina.
That triple save as well.
Yes. Oh, whew, kept us right in it.
Oh, 100%. Danny, how about yours?
I'm going to go with... God, this was really, really hard. Really difficult. I was going to go with Reina as well, but I'll go with Ezri Konsa. I'll go with Ezri Konsa. I think the defense did a good job, especially after the goal went in. It was great to see him, Mings, and Hawes all in the box so late on. I thought they exemplified the fight. I thought all the centre backs were quality during that game. I think there's also a shout for Matty Target as well, because his crosses, I think, were maybe underappreciated by the fact that Villa didn't have a proper striker up there. But I'm going to go with Ezri Konsa. He didn't get the goal, but he gets my match ball.
Oh, that's fair enough. You know what? I'm going to have to give it to Konsa as well. I thought he played a very tight, impressive game. Feel a little bit bad for the guy, but nonetheless, I'll give it to him there. One more thing, guys. Sorry to keep you any longer before we go, and I thought this was a good Twitter question to wrap it up. James, we'll come to you first. How many points do you guys essentially think it'll take to avoid relegation, and how many points do you think we'll get?
Ooh. I think you have to kind of look at 40. I know it's not been that for a long while, but the way this season's heading, it looks like teams are going to be on pace for 40 points. That said, I think 38 will keep Villa up, and I think they'll get 39.
Ooh, Danny?
Yeah, if you're looking at 38, then you're probably looking at about, I think, 13 points or so. That's, you know, still four more wins, really. Got about 12 games left. Can Villa win a third of their games? Can they pick up points along the way? Yeah, I think Villa end up on about 38, 39 as well. I agree with that. I think it's going to be tight. It's going to be very tight. Just because for what, like, I look at Villa some games and I think there is no chance this team stays up looking at how bad we are, right? At times. But then you watch a West Ham game and you watch a Bournemouth game and you watch a Brighton game and, you know, these teams as well as Villa are so inconsistent. So I think 37, 38 is probably going to keep you up. Just about. I think there's going to be a point in the season for a couple of these teams where they give up and they run out of steam. I think Watford will run out of steam eventually. They can't run as much as they have been all for the last few games. Then Villa could always do a pull away job like Burnley have been doing recently. It's just a couple of this is the funny thing. It's just a couple of wins and you all of a sudden look like daylight away from the relegation zone, don't you? Like that's what's crazy.
Yeah,
You get two wins in a row and you only need a couple more wins to get 38 points. It's crazy.
Yeah, like, I mean, this result, like, well, we'll preview the Bournemouth game later, of course. That'll come out later in the week in the new format, so hope you guys enjoy that. And thank you very much, Northeast Lions, for the question. Personally, myself, I think you'd need around 37 points, and I'm going to say we get 40. I'll be bold. A nice, even amount, I think that's good to say. But anyways, thank you, James. Thank you, Danny, for joining me, of course. It's greatly appreciated. We'll wrap it up there. This has been another edition of the 7500 to Holtcast. It's your host here, Cole, Talkcast Villa on Twitter. You can, of course, find Danny on Twitter at Razzajourno. You can find James on Twitter at JMoRushton. And, of course, all together, you can find us at www.7500toholt.com. And, of course, don't forget, up the Villa.